They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Europeans invented photography and the bicycle. Now they've prototyped a way around economic sanctions on Iran. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The European Union has just announced a new system that lets companies legally buy things from Iran. To review, President Trump, and therefore the United States, is set on pressuring Iran through economic sanctions. But we need to remember that Europe really doesn't like these sanctions. Europe is calling its payments through bartering system the special purpose vehicle. I asked the BBC's Viviane Nunes in London if this means European oil companies, which had been pulling back from Iran under sanctions threat, might now reconsider?
It's very hard to say at this stage because we have very few details on how this plan might work. Under the plan, the idea is oil companies could continue trading with Iran in a sort of bartering system. So Iranian oil could be exchanged for European goods without money changing hands. And that takes banks out of the equation.
But could the United States retaliate against this new European device, maybe change our sanctions rules and put this payment channel out of business?
That is what some analysts are saying, this new kind of bartering system that we're talking about. You know, it hasn't been used since the Cold War, so there are a lot of questions to be asked. Pascal Lamy, he's the former head of the World Trade Organization. He's also a Frenchman. He weighed in this morning saying this system could work. And also, he said that if American authorities do start penalizing European companies, such as banks down the line, Brussels is considering further measures that could penalize American companies in return.
The BBC's Viviane Nunes in London. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Great to talk to you.
The United Nations General Assembly, with President Trump set to speak today, the Kavanaugh confirmation process. Amid all of this, the Federal Reserve is meeting today and tomorrow to consider the economy and the cost of borrowing. I would say it's a foregone conclusion that the Fed will raise short-term interest rates tomorrow. I asked global economist Jay Bryson at Wells Fargo Securities, does that mean there's no suspense whatsoever about this meeting?
No, I think there is a little bit of suspense. I mean, what will be interesting is what they say in the statement. So currently they describe monetary policy as accommodative. That is, rates are still low enough to be stimulating economic activity. Well, some of these guys have been saying recently, we think we're getting closer to neutral. Do they say that in the statement? If they do, then that means we're, you know, it's not that rates aren't going to go up, but there's maybe an end in sight at some point.
The guardians of interest rates also put out a visual plot of where the different voting members of the Fed stand on these issues. And we get to see this. And what kind of information do you derive from this dot plot?
What will be interesting tomorrow is they will roll that out to 2021. And so, you know, visually, if we see the so-called dot plot is lower in 2021 than it is in 2020. Again, that is signaling to us that the Fed is believing it's getting closer to being done, and then at some point it will actually start to cut rates.
Global economist Jay Bryson at Wells Fargo Securities. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Every day you make decisions about your own personal economy, including choices that aren't obviously about money. That's why Marketplace covers business and finance from so many different angles, connecting the dots between complex issues and why they matter to you. Invest in Marketplace today to make sure public service journalism is always here to deliver reliable, objective news and context about the economic forces that affect you every day. Donate whatever amount is right for you at marketplace.org. And thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
The midterm elections are 6 weeks away, and for many first-time candidates, whether they win or lose, the election will be the culmination of a crash course in how to run for office. This includes how to raise money, or more specifically, how to ask for money. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams caught up with one first-time candidate in Virginia to see how she does it.
It's lunchtime, and Democratic candidate Vanjie Williams is working the crowd in a banquet hall in Ashland, Virginia.
Hey, Dr. Brock.
Okay.
She's there for a meeting of progressive groups in her district. They're training volunteers and raising money for the midterms.
I am so excited to see everyone coming through, volunteering, giving materials, buying shirts. We have a lot of shirts.
Williams works as a strategic planner now, but she used to be in real estate. Back then, she was comfortable talking about money. But she says asking people to contribute to her campaign feels more personal, complicated.
I understand why it's so hard now.
Some candidates even get training in the art of the ask. Williams did hers through a group called Emerge America, which offers a course to train Democratic women on how to run for office.
They say to us, wait, you mean I have to get in front of people and ask them for money?
Ashanti Golar is national political director for Emerge America.
And we say, yes, you know, this is a part of politics. It is part of running a campaign.
Williams raised around $60,000 in the primary. She knows she'll need much more for the general election. She's up against Republican Rob Whitman in a district held by the GOP since 1977. With her training, Williams says,
asking for money is not the problem. It's literally that a lot of people have no money.
While Virginia's 1st District has government contractors and high-income commuters who work in nearby Washington, D.C., Williams is also targeting lower-income voters. She says her supporters often contribute in other ways.
They have time. They have things they can give.
Winning the primary has helped take her fundraising to a new level. Williams' campaign says it's raised more than $250,000.
Those who have money are more comfortable giving in the general than the primary.
Her competitor, Whitman, already raised more than $1 million as of June 30th. Emerge America's Golar says money isn't everything in a race.
There are some races where you only need to raise $10,000. There are some races where you only need to raise $100,000. You can do that.
If, says Golar, you know how to ask. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.